A very frequent question for those of us dedicated to biblical interpretation is when to read the Bible literally or when to read it metaphorically. So I'm glad we have this Bible here. So I used to have a common tradition when I was young that I was asking God to speak to me. So normally I used to open the Bible and put my finger there. And that was crazy because sometimes it comes some passages that are very creepy and I didn't know what to do with them. So many people ask those questions. What are you going to do with the Bible? How to read it? And as we read this passage this morning, we know that it contains abundant metaphorical elements. And these direct us to one direction or two directions. But the direction the writer of Luke takes on this reading intentionally leaves us certain literary objects scattered everywhere in the narrative, like intentionally giving us signals in how to read the story. Among other things, the writer points to one of the most important elements in the culture and the Bible, the meaning of the proper names of people. In the Bible, in other traditions and other cultures, a person's name was associated with the person's purpose in life. Do anyone here know about what the meaning of your name is? Mine is one who people loved. I'm glad. But the man of the narrative is not named John or Jacob or any other of the common names of his time. Evil put a mark on this man that he did not ask for. Evil had stolen his own identity, so he was called Legion. I know people like to put names on the Bible to their children. I hope they're a boy to read Luke 8:26. Legion. From the traditional Hebrew perspective, the destiny and purpose of this man's life was subordinated to the word legion. In this case, a legion was a large unit of the Roman army. And curiously, nowhere else in the New Testament do we find the word legion, but here. The writer of Luke talks about an individual needing to find his lost identity that has been replaced by a cruel and abusive stain placed on his own image and reputation. According to Michel Foucault, one of the punitive tactics of the is to inflict a symbolic stain on people's name, humiliate his character, make a dent in his status, and something that revolves around shame and infamy. Throughout the history of humanity, we have seen this process of humiliation, submission, and shame, and we continue to see it today. We know about the many degrading nicknames placed on the reputation of Jewish, Italian, Chinese, Irish, and other immigrants. A wrong practice that we constantly see in people with double standards, especially politicians who cynically forget their immigrant roots. For this reason, we often ignore the name of the construction worker. We ignore the name of the person who does the gardening in our neighborhood, or the person who cleans our house or prepares the coffee in our church, because the system tells us what to call them. and uses the media to repeat it. They want us to call them illegals. At the end, Jesus gives back to this man his identity and sends him back to society as a new person. Sadly, this new man does not find a place in that community. That instead of welcoming and receiving him, despises and marginalizes him again. In what ways do we contribute to marginalized people not finding their space in society? So Luke not only speaks about the apathy, the lack of loyalty, and the indifference of the abused people over other abused people, but also about the need for a subversive gospel that challenges oppression and submission. Jesus wants to free these people from exploitation and domination, but the selfish interests of some do not allow it. So this exorcism not only shows the defeat of evil in the cosmic struggle, but also hints at the defeat of the Roman Empire. The only way to free that country from the dominion of the Roman Empire is to stop contributing to its military by cutting off the source of food, the pigs. When it comes to money, there is a group of individuals who do not consider the moral and the ethical implications of dominating others in order to profit from the less privileged ones. The groups that manage power will do whatever it takes to maintain control in domination. For them, Jesus and everyone who has the goal of freeing the captives represents a threat. Most of us know about children locked up in immigration cages just this morning without soap or toothpaste. But we tend to ignore the millions of dollars of profit earned by private companies that are getting rich from the separation of families. Primo Levi, a survivor of the Nazi concentration camps, in his book, The Drowned and the Saved, tells us that the fabrics used for the uniforms of the prisoners in the concentration camps, the gas suppliers used for the gas chambers, and the furnace manufacturers in Germany, they might have known about the purpose of such materials, but they prefer to keep it quiet in exchange for their economic gains. Similarly, in the country of the Gerasenes, something strange was happening, and they agreed with it. Jesus stands against their conformity and normalization of colonialism and enters to give freedom to the ones who are marginalized by society, abused by the empire, and discredited by the system. And this is the kind of church that the writer of Luke wants us to be. A church that enters the places of those who live in the margins, whose identity has been distorted and minimized by those who have privilege, and by those who have allowed that in the name of assimilation. The most needy have been forced to forget their roots. Jesus came to give freedom to the captives, and we follow in his footsteps. May the Spirit of God fill us to go to places where others do not want to go, and bring compassion and love to those that others want to reject. Amen.